This is an ABC podcast.
Hello and welcome to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. I'm Evan Wasuka. Coming up, Emmanuel Macron is back as the President of France, but what does this mean for the Pacific? Australia looks to strengthen military ties with Papua New Guinea. And we find out why one of the largest capital cities in the Pacific is running dry.
We can't shower, we can't make breakfast or lunch for the kids to go to school. If someone is controlling the water, they open it for a while and shut it off again.
The Pacific has been front and center of Australia's electoral campaign, with Solomon Islands Security Pact with China dominating headlines. Both sides of politics are using the deal to sway voters away from the opposing party. But does it really matter to Pacific Island voters in Australia? Marion Farr takes a look.
The signing of a security pact between Solomon Islands and China didn't come as a surprise to Stella Robinson.
Because, you see, for so long, Australia has always taken the Pacific for granted.
The Papua New Guinean-born Australian says the government's handling of relationships with the Pacific will influence how she votes.
There are references made by various Australian politicians, always about the Pacific family, the Pacific neighbourhood, and all the rest of it. But when it comes to issues of concern to us, our voice is not heard.
Her key priority is climate change.
For myself, as a voting Pacific Islander Australian, I will definitely be looking at who is going to champion our cause in raising the profile of the impact of climate change.
Fijian-born Salome Swan, who lives in Ipswich, was also disappointed to hear about the security deal.
And now they're all scrambling to do something, and it's a bit late. They were asleep when things were happening.
She thinks Australia's relationship with the Pacific could be improved if more was done to tackle climate change.
No one is really sort of making a strong commitment to it.
For Fijian-born Australian Donald Gordon, it's access to visas that's most important.
I have a deep concern that the Morrison government has not prioritised so many visa applications to reunite family members who have been either sponsored or they've applied to come to Australia, but these visas have been in queue for years.
As a Melbourne-based lawyer, he helps Pacific Islanders with immigration matters.
It's just heartbreaking as a professional person seeing that, you know, all the laws have been complied with, but there is this silent element in the law that the government cannot be forced to process these visas.
Labor has promised a new Pacific engagement visa to allow 3,000 people from the region to migrate to Australia each year. It's also vowed to extend the seasonal worker program visa from 9 to 11 months. Ray Burton from Pacific Support Connect, an organisation that helps Pacific Islanders with visa and legal issues, isn't impressed.
I see that as being a quick fix, I guess. It's a great election promise, but we can't add to an existing structure that's not supporting the existing people who are here.
And she'd like whoever wins government to stop deporting Pacific Island visa holders who are sentenced to time in prison.
It's a policy that has been there for quite some time and obviously has been detrimental to our Pacific communities.
Ray Burton from Pacific Connect and Support speaking there with Marion Farr. After the unease caused by the security deal between China and Solomon Islands, Australia and the US are seeking to strengthen security ties with Papua New Guinea. The Chief of Australia's Air Force has just signed an MOU with PNG's Defence Chief as part of an ongoing program to rebuild the country's air unit. The ABC's PNG correspondent, Natalie Whiting, with more.
For years, PNG Defence's air transport wing has sat largely idle, unable to take to the skies.
Today's signing of this MOU marks a different chapter.
Australian personnel arrived and began helping with plane maintenance and staff training last year. And this week, the Chief of the Royal Australian Air Force, Air Marshal Mel Hupfeld, has signed a memorandum of understanding.
We've had a strong relationship since, you know, as far back as the Second World War. Since then, the relationship has sort of stayed steady, but here's an opportunity for us to even strengthen the relationship further. The MOU really is just a piece of paper, but it empowers our people to work together.
PNG's gone a couple of decades, really, with not great air capabilities. Why was it in the last couple of years that Australia has come to the front on this one?
I think certainly our focus has been into other parts of the world, but our government's made it very clear it's important that we recognise the significance of our region, the security of our region.
Both Australia and the US stepped up their defence involvement in PNG back in 2018, notably with a plan to help redevelop the Lombrum Naval Base on Manus in what was seen as a pushback against increased interest in the country from China. PNG's Chief of Defence Force, Major General Mark Goyner, says the country's incredibly remote and rugged terrain means air travel is vital.
To see it all unfold, it's really, really enjoyable and it's a very good thing to see.
Australia and the US are again trying to boost defence ties in the region in the wake of the security deal signed between Solomon Islands and China.
Australia has always been our closest, enduring and a preferred partner when it comes to defence.
Nice to be back. Thank you very much.
Major General Goyner also met with the high-level US delegation when it stopped on its way to Solomon Islands. The US says more talks will be held in coming months about expanding its security cooperation with PNG.
You know, US is a very big country. They have got, a very big appetite, I must say. Yes, we had some discussions. We shared some views on how we see the security should look like within the region.
As for the situation in Solomon Islands, Major General Goyner says PNG respects its neighbours' sovereignty.
They make the decisions based on their security needs, and we respect that as close neighbours. All we want to see within the region is to ensure there's peace and security.
For his part, Air Marshal Hupfeld didn't want to weigh in on any potential security implications of the Solomon Islands Pact.
That's a little bit outside the scope of our mission here today.
Or on the Australian Defence Minister's recent ominous warning that Australia must prepare for war.
They're comments for politicians to make.
Chief of the Royal Australian Air Force, Air Marshal Mel Hupfeld, ending that report from Natalie Whiting. The French president has pledged to unite his country and make amends after beating far-right candidate Marine Le Pen in the national election. Le Pen was the favorite in most French overseas territories except those in the Pacific. While Emmanuel Macron appears to have maintained popularity in the region, issues like New Caledonian independence, the legacy of France nuclear testing in the Pacific, and regional security could complicate his second term. Marianne Farr with this story.
Emmanuel Macron declared victory on Sunday night in France, saying his election was a vote against the far right.
Mes chers compatriotes,
my dear fellow compatriots, it is with ambition and kindness for our country, for all of us, that I want to tackle by your side the next 5 years to come. This new era will not be a continuity to a five-year term that is ending, but rather the collective invention of a refound method for 5 years of better serving our country, our youth.
Vive la République! Et vive la France!
Macron is the first president of France to be re-elected in 20 years. He secured about 58% of the overall vote, defeating his opponent Marine Le Pen. She conceded, but promised to continue her campaign on far-right policies.
Le Rassemblement National œuvrera.
The National Rally will work to unite all those from wherever they may come who want to gather and gather their forces against the policy of Emmanuel Macron in order to present or support candidates everywhere in your constituency, in metropolitan France, overseas and in constituencies abroad.
Le Pen was the favourite in all French overseas territories except in the Pacific. In French Polynesia, Macron gained 51% of the vote and secured 61% in New Caledonia. He was also the clear winner in Wallis and Futuna, gaining a 67% majority.
It's not really surprising because Mr. Macron has made a very special effort in the Pacific.
Denise Fisher is a former Australian Consul General in New Caledonia. She says Macron maintained a strong relationship with the Pacific during his last term.
He's a known quantity. They know what he's about. As I say, he's made a major speech. He's certainly led France in participating constructively in the region in a very broad sense.
During his presidency, Mr. Macron made a number of visits to the Pacific, most recently to French Polynesia last year. His main objective was to address the legacy of nuclear testing in the region during the 1900s. France has been criticised for not doing enough to compensate Pacific Islanders for health problems they face from the explosions.
The main point of his speech was to reassure French Polynesians that he was going to take another look, that he was going to speed up and address these problems, these serious health issues and legacy from the nuclear testing issues. So they will certainly be looking to him to do that.
Ms. Fisher says Macron will also have to address issues in New Caledonia, where he was recently criticised for pressing ahead with an independence referendum amid a COVID-19 outbreak in the territory.
This was the critical final referendum, and there had been a trend in the previous two of a serious reduction in the very slim majority of pro-France voters, with a very clear and growing tendency for support for independence, principally amongst Indigenous Kanak people, who represented about 40% of the population. Their leaders called for a postponement of the referendum because of the impact of COVID deaths on their community at that time, which they said meant they couldn't really ask their people to come out and vote in such a time of mourning. The French government said no, under its rules, it had to really go ahead with this in December, and there was a massive boycott by the Indigenous Kanak people.
Ms. Fisher believes that led Indigenous people in New Caledonia to also boycott the presidential election.
If you look at the results and you look at the areas which are primarily Indigenous Kanak, in one area it was 92% in favour of Mr. Macron with something like, 2 to 3% voting. And this was represented, if you look at all the areas where there was high abstention rates, it was mainly in the Kanak communes. So there is discontent, there is a problem.
France is also a key security partner in the Pacific. Emmanuel Macron has been vocal about countering China's influence in the region, an issue that has become more heated with the recent signing of a security agreement between the Chinese and Solomon Islands governments.
It's going to be something that will be a challenge for France as well. New Caledonia, it's preeminent territory. One could argue that it is the first and principal overseas territory of France at the moment. It is where it headquarters its military presence in the Pacific Ocean. And New Caledonia is closer to the Solomon Islands physically than it is to Brisbane. So France, it will be keeping a close eye on developments there. It has been in a presidential campaign, a caretaker-type government period while this treaty was being publicised. So we haven't seen any statements or anything, but I think it will be watching very closely.
Another issue that will characterise France's relationship with the Pacific over the next 5 years is climate change. Ms. Fisher says Emmanuel Macron has been an active partner in the region when it comes to sustainability.
For a number of years, France has been conducting a triennial, every 3 years, summit meeting with Pacific Island leaders in their own right, a France-Pacific Island leaders meetings. These have always been centred on sustainable development in the region and increasingly with issues related to climate change.
Former Australian Consul General in New Caledonia, Denise Fisher, ending that report from Marion Farr. The taps are running dry in Papua New Guinea's capital, Port Moresby, where residents have been without a constant water supply for days. PNG Water says water rationing and maintenance is causing the water disruptions. Bethany Harriman in Port Moresby with this report.
It's like this every morning for people living in Port Moresby. The pipes groaning and rattling, but no sign of water. It's gotten so bad, even supplies from standby tanks have all been used up. Residents shower with what remains in small buckets. 56-year-old grandmother Alice Awari is a long-time Port Moresby resident.
It's very hard with water. We can't shower, we can't make breakfast or lunch for the kids to go to school. People going to work also can't prepare to go. If someone is controlling the water, they open it for a while and shut it off again.
Water bills have been paid, but there's no service.
To pay for the bill, we have to pay them, the water bill. But why is it that the water never comes to our street? Every time we stop PNG water vehicles on the road to tell them, but this problem still exists.
It isn't the first time the city has been brought to its knees by water cuts, and local MP Justin Chichanko has raised the matter in Parliament.
You ask anybody in my electorate, what's your major problem? They'll say, water. And then the blame comes back to me as a member, to the governor, and to the other members here as well from north, east and west.
He says the merger of two state entities that manage water isn't working.
It's a serious issue that needs to be addressed, and the whole management really needs to be overhauled. Water is a right for our people to have. We should not be begging for water. People are more than happy to pay for water if it's provided. But there's no water coming into our communities or our villages, especially our Motokoi Tabuans, the traditional customary landowners of our city.
Researchers say the difficulty of the PNG terrain plus lack of funding as the core reasons for the water cuts. A lack of good governance in managing state entities has also been pointed out.
Apart from the usual arguments that the topography and the fundings, we saw that there is more than that. And that thing that we see is the crisis of governance with the institutions themselves. They have been switching CEOs every now and then, and then there's no like proper establishment of strong governance. It's like it's something where you cannot see. It's like an oxygen. We breathe, but we don't see oxygen. But it sustains us. So governance, if it's kind of like that, if we have good governance, then it can be able to sustain institutions. And
researcher King Tao Mambon at the Australian National University says there is a need for urgent reforms within the organization.
Using appropriate rules and regulations to select people that are most suitable for the position, and we keep them away from political interference and let them run the institutions.
During Princess Anne's visit to Port Moresby, the water cuts continued and people took to social media to express their frustration, some asking if the princess knew about the situation, an embarrassment for authorities in Port Moresby. And it isn't just the water supply in Port Moresby. There are also power cuts with frequent blackouts. The Institute of National Affairs' Paul Barker says infrastructure was never improved or maintained since the 1970s to keep up with Port Moresby's expansion.
It requires several things at the same time. It requires that PNG Power is not only able to obtain its power at an affordable price, have a margin and make some money so that it actually then can maintain repair. It also needs new supplies. It requires a lot of coordination. It requires cooperation with some of the development partners to get the right deals for PNG Power and PNG Water. I mean, PNG Water.
PNG Water has a statement on its Facebook page stating there will be no further water rationing in April, that full restoration of water to city residents, but that has yet to happen.
Bethany Harriman reporting. Now to some sports. The Fijiana Drewers Super W Rugby Championship victory last week was thrilling for fans of the sport, as the new team overcame a formidable Waratahs outfit to win 32-26 in Melbourne. While the victory is a prime example of doing more with less, it's also shone a spotlight on the lack of sponsorship and support for women's sports teams. As Nick Fogarty reports, it's hoped the win can convince sponsors to help kickstart a new era of professionalism in Pacific women's sport.
It was an impassioned speech by the Fijiana Jewers captain Betila Tawake after her team's rousing victory in the Super W Grand Final.
And our family and friends, and especially my teammates for doing the hard job, and our sponsors, Rooster, Choose Quality, Choose Rooster.
While the team's choice for sponsorship naming rights as the Rooster Chicken Fijiana Drua was derided by some people after the match on social media, others were quick to point out that the team had to take what they could get. The Fijiana Drua were an extremely late entry into the Super W, having originally planned to join the competition next year, and they arrived in Australia ahead of their debut season with little fanfare on the 15th of February. Funding from Australia's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade helped the squad travel to and base themselves in Australia for the competition. But beyond that, Oceania Rugby's sole female representative on the World Rugby Council, Kathy Wong, says the cupboard was bare.
Obviously, it means the team, the whole preparation, like any business concept, the whole business concept was just not ready. But in saying that, it was also an opportunity. So rather than say, no, we're not ready, they took up the opportunity.
On top of that, Kathy Wong says, being a women's team, the Fijiana Drua faced other ingrained challenges.
In terms of the men and the women's team, the men have been professional since 1995. The women's team, it's not only in rugby, all sports, tennis, golf, professional sports, inequality still exists. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It's there. But it's how we deal with it.
Dr. Ashley Morgan is a lecturer in sport, business and marketing at Western Australia's Edith Cowan University. She agrees that investment gaps between men's and women's sport has led to an uneven playing field and less media coverage and sponsor interest further down the track. However, she says the situation is changing.
What we've actually seen in the last couple of years is actually quite a shift. So the relationship between women, the global sport economy and sport fandom is really shifting. And so we're seeing more women are visible as fans, broadcasters, celebrity athletes or media personalities. So that is really driving commercial interest in women's sport, and it's really opening up a whole range of marketing opportunities for sponsors to be involved. I think, yes, historically there have been gaps, but I do see that this is shifting, and those brands that are at the forefront of driving this growth will reap the most benefits.
Ashley Morgan says smart businesses are also identifying the unique message that sponsoring a women's team can provide.
What sponsors see that women's sport provides that possibly they won't get from men's sport is all to do with authenticity and being able to authentically engage and develop fan engagement through a whole range of different channels. So it provides, what women's sport provides is sort of the convergence of corporate social responsibility and commercial benefits for sponsors. So it's sort of looking at closing the gender gap, but then also providing commercial benefit.
In some cases, sponsors are even going past men's sports entirely.
Some of the sponsors that I spoke with, they wouldn't have considered, you know, that sponsoring the men's version of the sport. They were just interested in those really genuine stories that were coming out of these female athletes, you know, mostly that had double careers, had to work full-time, plus were trying to perform at a professional level.
For its part, Rooster Chicken also puts its money into Fiji's men's teams. But CEO Stanley Renega says the gender balance extends to the amount it spends.
It's equal. It's equal. I'm happy to tell you it's equal.
At this stage, Rooster Chicken are still Fijiana's only sponsor. But Stanley Renega says that's sure to change.
I think many companies should and will, because this is our women's team, and now they've gone on to represent Fiji as Fijiana in the test matches against Japan and Australia and then the World Cup. I'm sure the win will attract a lot more sponsors, and I'm certain more sponsors will come on board.
Whether it's a canny business decision or not, a move that's sure to help the already dominant Drua.
Nick Fogarty reporting. And that's it from Pacific Review. I'm Evan Wasuka. Thanks for listening, and do join us again at the same time next week for more news and views from around the Pacific.